Hello and welcome everyone to the Riverfront Red Show. This is episode number 522 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast, where we will discuss, you guessed it, the Cincinnati Reds, and specifically how we feel about some of the narratives heading into the 2024 season. I'm your host, Nate Dotson, and with me this week is the Podfather himself, Bill Lack. How's it going, Bill?
Doing great, man. Doing great. Pitchers and catchers next week.
I love it. I appreciate you joining me today. And this is the last podcast before spring training starts. And I feel like we ask this question every week, but how excited are you?
I'm very excited. In fact, by 3 weeks or 3.5 weeks, I will probably be going to see a little bit of spring training baseball. Woo-hoo. Not Reds baseball. I'll be in Florida, but I might have to go see those damn Cardinals just to scout them out a little bit. Because they're real close.
Just heckle them from the seats.
But it's great when you're. I'm going to be in West Palm, and there's a ballpark 20 minutes to the north of where I'm at, and 20 minutes to the south of where I'm at. You can go see baseball twice a day, every day.
That's killer. I took a trip in college down to Sarasota when the Reds were still there. Watched them. Drove over to Lakeland. I had a buddy that lived in Lakeland, so we got to see them play. The Tigers at the time. Tigers. I'm not sure if they're still there or not, but I went to three different ballparks, I think. Had a fantastic time. I may have been slightly overserved at the first game and fallen asleep in the grass behind the outfield. I was good after that, though. Don't worry. We made it out.
I've spent a lot of time in Ed Smith myself between when we used to vacation in Sarasota. I saw Jay Bruce playing the Gulf Coast League down there, and I was the only fan in the ballpark.
No way.
Yeah, it was the Gulf Coast League plays. It used to play at noon at Sarasota and Ed Smith, and it was baking hot. And I mean, I called and I went. I called and I said, you know, are these games open to the public? And yeah.
No one's ever asked us that before.
No one's ever asked that question. But we went down there. We were down there for when it was high A 1 year when Joey was still playing down there, and we saw a doubleheader, twilight doubleheader, and the first game went 12 innings, and the second game went 16 innings. Jeez. My wife made me leave at 2 o'clock in the morning.
You know what? She stayed with you that long.
Yes, she
That's
did.
A trooper right there.
She's a keeper, man. She's a keeper.
Yeah, if anybody's never been to a spring training game, it is a lot of fun. I am hoping and praying I can make an Arizona trip happen.
Yeah, I'd like to get out there too. I saw the Reds play in spring training one time in Lakeland, like you did, when Deion Sanders was with the Reds. And that's the only Reds spring training game I've ever seen. I was kind of heartbroken when they moved to Arizona because I was getting ready to retire. And I'm going, well, you know, we'll be spending time in Florida. It'll be great. And then they go to Arizona.
Yeah, it's just so cool getting to see. You can go to one game and see, you know, 25 players, and then the historical guys that are there, just bopping around and instructing the younger guys. It's a lot of fun. If anybody gets a chance to go, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. But before we go any further, as always, please head over to YouTube, give us a like, give us a follow, subscribe, all those things. We're on all the podcast apps. You can like us there too. It helps the podcast grow, and we would like to grow. As someone who is 5'11 and a half, I understand what it's like to want to grow. So we're keeping that up here on the podcast. Also, and by far most importantly, the show, we could not do it without the support of our Patreon family. The gang over there is too good. We don't deserve you. If you'd like to join the family, head on over to patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. As well as a couple bucks a month, you can join our Slack channels. We're doing monthly hangouts, which we are overdue for one. I apologize, Patreon fam. We're looking at doing a meetup at a Reds game this year. We've got some perks, t-shirts and mugs and all the stuff that you expect on a subscription-based thing. Mostly, we're just having a good time talking about everything. The Reds, the Bengals. Today was the hoops, the NBA chat, basketball chat was going crazy because it was the NBA trade deadline. So come on over, have a good time. We'd love to have you. And that's it, Bill. Let's get into some Reds talk.
Let's do that.
I guess the big news this week, at least as far as the interwebs were concerned, is that the Pecota projections came out. And I feel like they are a little more highly reputable. At least people like to believe they are. People get excited when they release theirs. And they weren't good. If you are a Reds fan, they were not good. They do not expect our Cincinnati Reds to be very good this season. As a matter of fact, they predict the Reds will win 78 games and finish fourth in the NL Central. If you've been listening to this podcast, especially recently when we've been comparing the Reds to these other Central teams, that is quite a different narrative than what I've been spewing at people lately. And I think we've kind of been aligned on. So what was your initial reaction to just seeing that win-loss record, 78-84?
Well, all of these projection things for the Reds have not been very friendly. And I'll be honest with you, I like it. Because If you're one of the Reds players, chip on the shoulder, man. They're going to go into spring training. We're going to show you how good we can be. I like teams that play with a chip on their shoulder. And badmouth the team all you want. Media, they'll take that and use that as something to build on. The other thing, though, you know how many wins the Pecota projected for the Reds last year?
How many?
67.
Oh.
So they were 15 wins off. So if they're predicting 74 this year, we're going to win 89, I guess.
You know, I'll take that.
I'd take that and run to the bank with 89 wins.
100%. And you're right. I hadn't really thought about the whole bulletin board material.
Yeah.
Sort of aspect to it. And this team, they seem to kind of thrive on that. They did last year. They saw how people were questioning whether or not they were going to lose 100 games again. And I think you could say that Jonathan India was probably the troop rallier in that regard. Said, hey, guys, we're better than this. We're pros. So if they use this as motivation again, more power to them. I'm all about it. The thing that jumped out to me the most – go ahead.
I have to say, though, I don't understand all of these projections projecting very little improvement from so many talented young players. And if you look at the projections on Fangraphs, you look at the projections on Baseball Reference, none of them are really projecting much improvement from our young guys. And I understand, and we're going to talk more about this in a little while. I don't expect everybody to progress, but some guys are going to progress, and that doesn't really seem to be showing in any of these projections.
Yeah, there were some weird things where they were saying, like, Christian Encarnacion Strand is going to be the best hitter on the team, but he's only going to play 99 games.
Like, yeah.
Where's that coming from? Do they think that Matt McClain is just not that good? He's going to be a 250 hitter. So I don't know. I know that a lot of these projection systems, what they do is they base their model on past performance. And it is notoriously difficult to project young players because they just don't have the data to rely on. But then thinking the Cardinals are going to win the division, I don't see it. I mean, Arenado and Goldschmidt are studs. Sonny Gray's a stud. Jordan Walker, the rookie's a stud. But after that, I mean, I could see them finishing dead last again. I could see them finishing anywhere 3-5.
Well, they're so old, they have all that historical data that you're talking about. See?
I think that's it.
Well, the other thing is, I would think a lot of the supposition about the Reds is based on concern about injuries. And it very well could happen again. But we had a lot of guys that were injured last year that, you know, that are young. There's no reason to believe they're going to be hurt again this year. The Cardinals are all old. I would think the older you are, the more susceptible you are to injury. Because I know when I get out of bed every morning, I wonder what the hell's going to hurt that day.
I think I heard the guys over at Locked On calling them the Tapioca Pudding Brigade, which I found hysterical.
Wow. I like that.
They are leaning hard into how old the Cardinals are over there. So, yeah, the other big thing that really, really jumped out to me, and Doug Gray over at RedLegNation.com pointed this out, was that they did project the Reds to score a handful more runs than they did last season. Let's see if I can pull up the exact numbers here. They project them to give up. So last year, the Reds scored 783, and they project them this year to score 795. So slight improvement offensively. Okay, whatever. I can wrap my head around that. Last year, the Reds allowed 821 runs, and they expect the Reds to give up 829 this year. They expect the Reds' pitching to be worse than last year. And I can't see any universe where that's the case. I feel like the pitching is so much better than last year. Yeah, sure. That top level elite ace that we've all wanted that never materialized. I get it. But the depth and the number three starter potential of every start pitcher on the roster just makes me think that they are extremely undervaluing.
Well, like you've said a million times here, you know, they gave 21 starts to Luke Weaver with a 6.87 ERA.
Yeah.
You know, and a FIP of 5.86. You know, do you really think that this team this year with the depth that they've improved the pitching staff with, that they're going to give 100 innings up to a guy with an ERA of almost 7? I don't see that.
No, not if they're – and last year they had no expectations. No, they did not expect to be contending. This year they're going to expect to win games right out of the gate. So they can't afford to give those starts out and give those innings out. So I think their projections are crazy. If you can find – there's a reason that Vegas – you won't find a betting website anywhere that has the Reds over under at 78.
I don't see it.
And if you do find it, send it to me because I'm going to put the mortgage on it.
Yeah, if there is, I'm going to put some pretty good money. And I'm a tight ass, so, you know. but I would be betting the over on that dude.
That's how you know it's a good deal.
That's right.
As far as the Reds' chances for winning their division, they got a little bit better in my estimation because the Milwaukee Brewers might be mailing it in, Bill. They traded their ace, Corbin Burns, to Baltimore. I assume you saw that.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't figure out what they're thinking is in Milwaukee. It appears like they went out and spent a whole bunch of money. And they're, you know, and they've still got some guys that can hit the ball, but then they, you know, they trade away their best pitcher. You know, it's like one guy thinks the window's open, and the other guy's slamming it shut.
Well, on one hand, I'm pretty pumped that he will no longer be in the National League Central. I mean, he is a certified ace, 2021 Cy Young winner, top 10 each of the last four seasons. The one thing I don't like about this is that I'm afraid, and time will tell if it's the right move or not, that this might be what we can expect from the above average to elite Reds players going forward. Trade them before the end of their deals, get whatever you can back, and try to just keep the wheel a-churning instead of locking these guys up super long-term. You know, it's the classic Brewers move. They got two young guys and a draft pick back. Both of their guys they got back were, you know, at the back end of Baltimore's top 10 in their system. And Baltimore has a very, very good system. High potential middle infielder and left-handed pitcher. I mean, Milwaukee trusts their coach and their staff to turn these guys into gems. And I don't know. I'm torn. I just feel like if you get a Corbin Burns, you want to keep him. Well, there's not many aces out there.
It's the Tampa Bay model.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's tough to argue against the success that they've had down in Tampa. You know, if I think that would still fill ballparks. If the Reds did followed that model, and I'm not saying that they have the capability to do that or the brains or whatever, or whether they should. Mm-hmm. But if this team was in contention every year, they wouldn't have to worry about attendance.
That's a fact.
If the team wins, people will go to the ballpark.
We saw that last year. Yeah, more so than most other MLB cities. Cincinnati rallies behind their winner. Another takeaway I have to add from this was that's not a ton of a cost. That's not a huge price for 1 year of one of the best pitchers in all of Major League Baseball. Obviously, yeah. Interdivision trades are rare, so there's no point in saying, the Reds could have done that and tacked on somebody else. Fruitless, but if that's what you're getting for these one-year deals, that kind of changes the landscape of the trade deadline a little bit because people were asking the moon. We saw it with Dylan Cease, who has multiple years of team control, but if there becomes this divide where you have to give up the farm for a player with multiple years of team control, but you can get a few months of somebody who's going to be a free agent for a whole lot less, if this kind of resets that market, I'm interested in that because we say it here all the time, if the Reds want to make a true World Series push, either Hunter Green needs to be an ace, Frankie Montas needs to be an ace, or they need to go get one at the deadline. I think Lodolo has ace potential, sure, but I don't see him pitching enough this year just because they're going to have to put a limit on him.
Well, in addition to the fact that if what you're saying is the case where you can get a true number one at the deadline for one A prospect and one B prospect, and it'll push you into the playoffs, you know, if they'd have went out and got somebody last year, how can you say they wouldn't have made a playoffs when they finished two games out?
Yeah. They could have got a couple guys in the bullpen, a couple more. Sam Moll was good. I'm a Sam Moll fan, but
I am too. But one guy, you know, one reliever who pitches every 3 days, you know, and he's basically pitching to left-handers isn't a difference maker. He's not a guy that's going to push you into the playoffs.
Right. Well, it seems like Nick Kroll has a plan. Maybe what was available to him at the deadline last year wasn't part of his plan, but it does kind of seem like he has one, which is something that I have not felt confident about since he showed up in Cincinnati, which is, I guess, is a good time to sort of pivot to another thing I wanted to bring up. Did you see the Athletics 2024 fan survey results?
Yeah, I printed out some of this stuff. I mean, and there really isn't anything real surprising in it, but there's some of it that the preponderance of the results is kind of surprising. Like the first question was, how confident are you in ownership led by Bob Castellini? And the way they did this, it's 1 through 5 with 1 being very low and 5 being very high. And 61% of the people were either low or very low on ownership, and 91% were average, low, or very low.
Yeah. Which checks out.
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it doesn't surprise me, but I am a little surprised after last year that more people haven't kind of pivoted to giving ownership more credit.
I was kind of proud of Reds fans because there are 17 people out there that are very confident in ownership, and those people need a lobotomy. We need to talk to their primary care physicians, make sure they're okay. But whereas the ownership did not have that confidence, Nick Kroll's confidence, 46.7% had a 4 out of 5, and the next highest was 25.5% saying that they are all the way on a 5. They're extremely confident.
So well, the average, vast majority of people are saying averaging up totaled out to 93.8.
Yeah. So, I mean, people are saying that we believe in Nick Kroll. We don't quite care about this Castellini crew very much. But compare that to ownership last year. They'll still probably take that. The approval rating has gone up, that's for sure. But I think people are believing. They're buying into Nick Kroll's plan. I just really – and I'm buying in. I'm not going to lie. More time goes on, I'm drinking the Kroll-Aid, and I don't like it about myself.
Kroll-Aid. I like that.
It just keeps happening. But I hope part of his plan is making a World Series push, not just a playoff push. But we'll see. Some other interesting notes. The David Bell confidence meter, 42.4% with a 4. I was surprised by that.
And 40% at 3. So, I mean, basically people are saying, he's all right.
Meh.
Yeah.
I think that's where I am. I think the more I thought about it, I'm kind of at a 3. There's better. There's worse.
Well, I think it's like your brother said. You know, I think it's your brother that says there's 5 really good managers and 5 really bad managers, and everybody else is in the middle. He's in the middle.
Yeah. He's in the middle, and I think with this roster that Nick Kroll put together, it's going to eliminate a lot of the things that infuriate me about David Bell. The tinkering.
I don't know. He just can't
keep his hands off the lineup.
I don't know that it will. I think it'll keep us from seeing Kevin Newman leading off. But I still think he's going to be jockeying all the time. In fact, I think now he's got more pieces to jockey with.
And I agree with that, but I think that the pieces that he's jockeying with won't infuriate me.
Right. They're going to be better players.
Yeah.
I agree.
There'll be plenty of jockeying. And then instead of me being like, why is Nick Senzel batting against a right-handed pitcher in the bottom of the ninth for the third time this game because you pinch hit for Will Benson or Joey Votto in the third?
Yeah.
Those are gone. He definitely won't be pinching for Joey Votto this year.
No, he will not.
Well, we can't rule that out completely. I refuse to rule it out until it is happening.
Until Joey signs with somebody, huh?
Yep.
Were you surprised? Were you surprised about the question about the position players and who would have the best career?
So I was going to get to that one next. Okay. Yeah, I was. This was probably the one that shocked me the most. So we'll go ahead and read off what those numbers were.
Well, the question is, which of the Reds' 2023 rookie position players do you expect to have the best career? And number one was Matt McClain with 60% of the vote.
60%?
60.1. And then it was Ellie with 26.7, and then it dropped to Spencer Steer and went down from there. And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised if Spencer Steer has the best career of all of them.
Ooh. Okay.
I could see him just being a 110, 115 long career, you know, 110, 115 ERA or OPS plus for a long career, just an above average player for a long time. And we'll probably never have a year as good as McClain will have or Ellie will have, but they'll just have a longer career because he's so versatile. And I may be wrong, but I just think he's going to be a steady guy.
You know, that brings up a good way to analyze that question. If you're really breaking down the parameters, Spencer Steer could be above average for 15 years, whereas Matt McClain could set the world on fire for 4 or 6 or whatever. I was mostly surprised. I'm not surprised Matt McClain was had the highest percentage. I'm just surprised at the gap between him and Ellie. With Ellie at 26.7. I mean, I get it. Like, I get why people are high on Matt McClain. But Ellie's potential is so ridiculous. It's so much higher than Matt McClain's. And this is a pro Matt McClain podcast. I'm a pro Matt McClain guy.
Absolutely. Love Matt McClain.
But
like we were saying, Steer may be a pretty good ball player for 15 years, never make an all-star team, but always just be a really good ball player. And Ellie may have, you know, he may win two MVPs in 10 years. You know, very possible. I think McClain, I don't think McClain's an MVP type player, but I could see him being a multiple all-star game guy.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll tell you what, though, if we're looking at a scenario where we have to argue about which of those three players specifically, because don't forget about CES.
Yeah.
Another guy that could end up putting a really nice career together. If we're talking about, we're having the same debate in a few years because they're both playing so well and we're looking at guys that are multi-time all-stars, then
it'll be pretty good.
This version of the Reds is going to be sitting pretty. They also did it with the, also did want to mention real quick, Noelvi Marte was not an option in that exercise. They did have someone else, like you just choose, you know, the field.
Yeah, they had an other.
Yeah. It was specifically about the 2023 rookies, and Marte is technically a rookie this coming season. They asked the same thing about the pitchers. Andrew Abbott ran away with it at 70.8%. He was going to have the best career. I was mostly surprised that Connor Phillips finished second with 17.3%. People are really high on him.
Yep. And I tell you what, from what the expectations were of Brandon Williamson going into the season last year, he gave them a good year.
He did. I wonder if that's going to end up being a flash in the pan, or people forget that when the Reds acquired him, he was a top 100 prospect. He was a dude a lot of people were really high on, and he was just so rough when he first got in the organization that we let him slide, and it didn't help that he was rough up until he got to the Reds rotation.
Yeah.
Such a weird path for Brandon Williamson.
And I think he's going to hopefully spends the majority of this year at Louisville. Because that would mean our rotation is healthy.
100%. I hope he makes 12 to 15 starts for the Reds this year, but he stays stretched out in Louisville and is an integral part to the postseason rotation or pitching staff in some regard. Did you see that as far as the 2023 rookie pitcher question? Somebody voted, I don't expect any to have good careers.
It makes you wonder why they're watching this team, doesn't it?
My initial question was, which of you in Riverfront Land was that? We've been known to be the less rosy of Reds podcasts on occasion. I don't think there's anything else. I guess the only other one that I thought worth mentioning is they asked if they thought the decision to not pick up Joey Votto's option was the right call. 45.7% say it was. 44.4% says they don't like it, but they understand it. And 8.8% said they hate it. Now, I voted on this, and I voted hate it because I personally do. But I think if I was being objective, which I'm certainly not, I would say don't like it, but understand it.
Yeah, I could have went on either one of those. I would have voted on one or the other of those. The other question I found interesting was, which of the Reds starters do you expect to have the best 2024? And what I found, it didn't surprise me that Hunter Green ran away with it, even though I'm not sure that's the way I'd have voted. I think he's got enormous stuff, but I have not seen a whole hell of a lot of improvement in him in 2 years, from 1 year to the next. He needs to take a big jump this year. But what was interesting on there was that Frankie Montas finished fifth.
Yeah.
At 8.2%, below Abbott, below Lodolo, below Ashcraft. And if he's worse than all of those guys, I think this team's in trouble. If he's healthy and is worse than all of those guys, I think this team's in trouble.
That was my initial reaction too, but I thought about it for a minute and I decided to frame it a different way, exactly what you were saying, that people are expecting Hunter Green to take a massive leap.
So that's one guy.
Well, they predict Ashcraft to be the second best pitcher, and you know how much I love my boy Graham Ashcraft.
I'll tell you what, if he can keep his peaks and shorten his valleys, he could be a stud.
100%. His first 6 starts and last 11 were elite right, stuff.
What was it, 10 in the middle, something like that?
Well, it was 12 in the middle.
Yeah, they were not good.
It's about as bad as it gets.
Have you ever heard how he broke his toes?
No.
I hadn't either. I have to believe that he kicked something. I mean, he is a bit of a fiery guy.
Watching him compete, that would not surprise me a bit.
That was always my thought. Well, the other thing that ties into the Frankie Montas thing is a further question was, what was the team's best offseason addition? And he was the number one choice.
Listen, these are Reds fans they're pulling. We're not rational people.
What else was interesting?
By the seat of their pants.
The biggest prediction was between 82 and 89 wins.
Which I would agree with.
I'll be happy with that. I'd be happier towards 89 than I will be down towards 82, but the excitement level, the game number of games attended. Will the Reds play in World Series in the next 5 years?
Ooh, I didn't see that one.
61% said yes, 39% said no.
I would like to see if you polled every other franchise in Major League Baseball. Will the Reds make the World Series in the next 5 years? What those numbers would look like.
If every other team polled their fan base about their team, how different their numbers would look. I mean, if you're the Dodgers or the Yankees, they're going to be 98% say yes, but
don't look at the Oakland fans.
I still hate the A's. Because that's 1972, and I still hate the A's
for good reason.
Yes.
All right, we have a little bit more news. The Reds got some new hats. Spring training hats dropped. Batting practice hats dropped. I hate that counts for news, but it's been a slow offseason outside of a few things. Do you have any strong opinions about either of those hats?
Sorry about that. I had to turn on a light. You're good. I think they're ugly, but I don't like I think they look like softball hats. But I don't like the City Center uniforms either. So, and as we were talking, and we were joking about this down at the ball game that night, or at the bar before the game and everything. I know I'm in the vast minority. I guess I'm yelling at the clouds again.
Oh, Bill's yelling at the clouds again.
But I don't care for them, and I don't like these either. And I like the black in the uniforms. So, I know I'm in the minority. And I like the old vest uniforms.
I love the vest uniforms. I'm going to go back to the vest and no sleeves. Let it rip.
Ted Klazuski's son down there playing first base.
Got to.
Actually, probably be his grandson by now, but
true. I think the spring training hats are useless. They're the most boring thing they could have possibly come up with.
It's all about the money, man.
I get it, but get a little creative with it. That's why I like the batting practice hats. I would not like the batting practice hats if they were going to be used in the regular on the field rotation. But because they're batting practice only and they got weird and they made softball hats, I think they're pretty dope.
You like the flat bills too, right? You like the flat
brim Fridays. You can see me at the ballpark this year, Bill. I can't pull off a flat brim. I can't do it. I've tried every hat you could think of. My funny shaped head just doesn't make it.
That unless I'm on a boat or catching, you'll never see my hat on backwards.
Now I will rock a backwards hat. Maybe I'll rock one of those bad practice caps. We'll see. Last bit of news is that there will be one new person wearing a Reds uniform at the very least in spring training. And that was the most predictable signing of the offseason. Cincinnati native Josh Harrison has been signed to a minor league deal with a spring training invite.
He lives about 5 minutes that way from me.
All right. Well, then be kind with your take on this signing. Come TP your house.
He lives in a much more exclusive neighborhood than I do. like you said, it's not surprising. He's got an opt out for sometime in March. I know, like March 26th or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
I'm guessing if he's not playing well in spring training or he doesn't look like he's going to make this team, I think he opts out. I don't think he plays in Louisville. Is he on this team beginning of the season? I don't know. Should he be? I don't know. He doesn't have anything to prove in spring training. I mean, I know he does, but we always talk about sample size. You know, if he plays in 10, 15 spring training game, is that going to tell you whether he's going to help the team or not? I don't think so.
That's a good call. I mean, you know, from 2019 to 2022, his slash line was a .225 batting average, .319 on base, .374 slugging. That's not good.
It was
worse last year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's something to say, I guess, about veteran leadership. Part of me wonders if he's just like, hey, I'm going to give it one last shot before retiring. Might as well do it close to home.
Yeah. I mean, if he – home games, he could be in the ballpark in 45 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing is, all the discussion seems to be like the belief is it's going to come down to him or Barrero. And if you don't believe in spring training, you're going to have to take a leap of faith to keep Barrero on this team. I mean, I think he's really going to have to come out and he's going to have to impress in spring training.
Yeah, I suspect you're right. I mean, Josh Harrison, at least you know Harrison, you know what you're getting.
Right.
The offense is he's a light hitting utility man who's going to bring a higher floor than Jose Barrero's
right
level of consistency to this lineup. And I mean, go ahead.
Is there a chance that Barrero's figured something out? I hope so.
Yes.
You know, I hope so.
Always a chance.
I mean,
if Barrero doesn't work out,
he might come in here and be Josh Hamilton.
This is why I can never be a scout. I can never be a good scout because I watch Jose Barrero move around a baseball field and you're like, that guy's got it. He is so talented. That athletic ability is insane. And then you watch what he's done in the batter's box in the big leagues and it's just atrocious. I hope so, because if he can just be league average, then his versatility, his athleticism could really do wonders for this lineup.
He gives you a backup in center field that they don't have right now.
Mm-hmm. You can play a couple infield spots, couple outfield spots. Now, if Josh Harrison is just doing Josh Harrison things, that doesn't move the needle at all. A good Jose Barrero could move the needle a little bit. So I'd rather see him take that chance. But like you said, Josh Harrison has nothing to prove. Jose Barrero does.
Yep.
He needs to come. If he comes out and stinks it up, even with a small sample size, he's out of options. We might be saying goodbye to him and talking about him as an obscure former Red.
Well, and we're talking about probably the 26th guy on the ball club.
Yeah, him and Stu.
Yeah. And
anyway,
I would, assuming he comes in there and doesn't look awful in spring training, he would be my pick because he's got a chance of getting better. Harrison's not going to get any better than he is now.
That's the entire equation for me.
And
Jose Barrera still has potential.
Yep, and this is the 26th guy on your ball club. If you're going to take a leap of faith, you want to do it with the 26th guy, you know?
Yeah, so, Barrera's athleticism, turn him into a plus-plus-plus defender somewhere and let him run the bases.
Yep.
I don't know. We'll see. These guys are smarter than I am, so who knows what's going to happen, but I'm on Team Barrera.
Yeah, I kind of am too. You know, if he comes into spring training and plays reasonably well, to me, he's the that last guy.
Yeah, barring some signing that we haven't seen yet. Cody Bellinger, still out there.
Knowing what we know now.
Yeah. All right, so there's been a lot of discussion, Bill, about, I guess, as it relates to these progressions, why they don't seem to be giving enough credit to this amazing core of rookies that the Reds had last year. And that got us talking about how do we feel about their 2024 performances versus last year. Are there going to be sophomore slumps? Are we a little too optimistic on some of these guys? So we thought it could be fun to do one of our classic buy, sell, hold episodes where we throw out some opinions and discuss whether we are buying it as in, yes, we think this is true, selling it as we think it's not true, or holding, we're taking the easy way out and we don't want to make a decision either way. We frown upon holding in this podcast. We like to buy or sell. Feelings, no facts. So we actually also got our viewers, our Patreon family, to help out with some of these. So we're going to throw out a couple ourselves. We'll get some help from the Patreon community. And we're going to tell you how we feel about some of the storylines, some of the opinions that we have and the other people have heading into this 2024 season for our main segment. So we've talked a lot about this guy, and I see no better way to start this segment than to say, Bill, are you going to buy, sell, or hold Matt McClain will have a better year in 2024 than he did in 2023?
I've got him as a small regression. I got him – I could see his OPS being somewhere around 120. He was at 129 last year. You know, but I think he'll hit over 20 home runs. I think he's like a three-war guy, three wins above replacement guy, which I'll take that all day long.
That's very good.
Yeah, but
you like that from your second baseman.
Yeah, I don't think he's as good as what we saw. I don't think he'll be as good as what we saw last year.
So I think I'm going to sell this. Also, that's why I was so shocked by that 60% saying that he's going to have the best career. I think he's really good. I think it's important to remember that he played in 89 games last year. So please stay healthy, Matt McClain. His numbers were ridiculous. 129 OPS plus, 864 OPS. That 507 slugging is pretty wild. Now, he plays great defense, so that glove's always going to play. And I think he's going to have a very good season. But some of the advanced stuff isn't particularly kind. They say he got a little bit lucky. I mean, some of that you create your own luck with speed and chaos.
Yeah, but, I mean, he had 16 home runs and 400 plate appearances. I mean, so yeah. I don't think saying he's going to hit over 20 is any big stretch.
I don't think so either. I mean, he showed some things that surprised even the most optimistic of us. Mm-hmm. Now, could it be because he had a down 2022? So some of his prospect pedigree tapered off a little bit. I don't know, but he was awesome last year. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're both wrong. I hope he far exceeds. I can see him putting up worse offensive numbers, but over 140 games, and I'll take that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's when he came up last year is when their season turned around, when they started to win.
Yeah. 100%.
Now, whether you know you can give him some of that credit and, you know, whatever, but things happen at, you know, at certain times for certain reasons. So I was, I'm very high on him just because I don't think he's going to be quite as good as his numbers are going to be as high as they were last year. Doesn't mean I don't think he's a really, really good player.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. That's a great way to put it. Let's use this to go ahead and ask the same question about some of the other guys that are going to be integral to this season. By Sarah Holt, Ty Steve having a better year than 2023.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm buying it too. And for a very different reason than Matt McClain. I just think he's better than he was last year. He was not very good.
He's coming into his peak age years where he should be he should be hitting his peak. I think he had a bad year last year offensively. I think, you know, he was at 87 OPS plus. I think he'll be between 100 and 110. I think he'll be above average, maybe a 1.5, maybe 2 wins above replacement guy. And if his defense gets better, I'm thrilled.
Yeah. I mean, if his defense gets better and he gets that bat up to anything above 100 OPS plus, then you've got a cornerstone.
I struggle with his defense, especially on pitches down. But you know,
I was hanging out with my buddy Clay, who friend of the podcast, definitely the Patreon family, was a catcher, played college baseball, and he has been harping on this from day one. It's this knee down stance, it's one leg down catcher stance. It blows his mind, and I would like to hear from a professional catcher to see what their take on it is. But it seems like somebody with Tyler Stevenson's massive frame losing some of the agility that comes with not being able to pivot one way or the other. It just seems obvious to me, and I'm sure it's not. But I'm with you right there. I hope they figured that out. And if you follow him on social media, you know he's in the lab working nonstop. So we'll see. I'm with you.
I remember back, there used to be a guy that used to play catcher here. His number was 5. And I don't ever remember him catching a ball on one knee, ever.
I've heard of that guy. If we're going to follow anybody, maybe the best to ever do it. Another really interesting one, TJ Friedl. Buy, sell, or hold, he will surpass his 2023 numbers in the upcoming season.
I would sell on him. Not a whole. I don't think he's going to be terrible, but I think he's going to. If I was predicting, I'd have him between 100 and 110. I think he'll hit 20 home runs. I think he'll be more like his 22 numbers than he was than will be his 23 numbers. And he's another guy that this team needs him to stay healthy. And that may be the most important thing for him is staying healthy. But he's another guy for age wise. He's hitting his peak age years.
That's why I wanted to hold it, but that's the easy way out. That's weak. And I'm not going to do that. The audience deserves better. I'm going to buy this. I think he is going to actually surpass last year's numbers. Here's why. He has a few things that are slump proof because he can lay down bunts to get hits. He's got some speed, so he's going to sneak a few in there. You brought up 2022, which is completely fair. I choose to believe, and it was the narrative at the time, that he was struggling in 22, went down, made a very specific change to his swing, and he was awesome for the rest of 2022, and he was pretty darn consistent last year. Had a little bit of a dip in the dog days, but for the vast majority of the season, he was the same player all season long. And I think, like you said, health, and I throw health out of the equation. Every team is worried about their player's health. I think that he is that guy that we saw last year and another full season of the big leagues without having to worry about his spot in the lineup, whether he's going to get sent back down or not, is only going to benefit him, and he's going to have a slightly better year this year. Now, I think
I hope you're right.
You know, he's not the prospect that some of these guys that we love are and were, but not everybody is. So I think he's not going to have this long, sustained run perhaps, but we're going to get 3 to 5 years of a very, very solid TJ Friedl.
Well, and you know, he had a 352 on base, and if he can improve that a little bit at the top of the lineup, he's setting the table for some big bats behind it.
100%. He's going to have a lot more protection this year than he did last year.
Yep.
Let's move on a little bit. We are already at 45 minutes in this bad boy. I do want to get to this guy because I know this is your boy. Spencer Steer. This coming season versus last.
This is a tough one. He's another one that I would sell on a little bit. Not dramatically. I don't think he's going to drop off the table, but I could see him being a 2.5 wins above replacement guy at 110, 115. You know, just a small drop off. I think playing full time in the outfield is going to, I don't know, affect his offense. Maybe he's going to feel like he has to try to drive the ball a little more because he's playing in the outfield than he did in the past. I
hope not. He drove it plenty.
I hope not too. I was looking at the baseball reference projections, and I basically agree with the baseball reference projections for him.
I struggle with this one a lot. There's a strong argument to be made that he was the most important offensive player for the Reds last year, especially if you include games played. He didn't have the best slash line, sure, but it was one of the best slash lines, and he played in 156 freaking games. That is so many games. So if he tails off even a little bit, he can still be incredibly valuable. But because, you know, this is a podcast. We're here for the content, baby. He's going to be even better. I do see Spencer Steer maybe tailing off a little bit the batting average side of things. Not a lot. But I can see him hitting more bombs. I can see him becoming a 25-plus home run guy.
I was going to say that. I agreed with his projections on Baseball Reference, and I went back and looked. They've only got him at 16 or 18 home runs, and I think he'll easily hit 20.
I think you can pencil him as 20 home run guy for the rest of his career.
I can see his batting average dropping off a little bit, but you know, OPS, I think he'll be around 800, which is what, you know, basically what they're predicting. But I think, and this is true with almost all the projections that I looked at for these guys. I think they're predicting all of the Reds' home runs low.
I could not agree more. It blew my mind. Guys like Jamer Candelario, who hit, you know, 23 or 26, whatever it was last year, that would have translated, because they can track this now, to 33, I think, at Great American Ballpark, 30 or 33, and they're projecting him to get 22. I don't understand how they're coming up with some of this stuff. But that's for them and the computers, not me. They're probably people that wear those new Apple VR headsets.
I think this team has 4 or 5 20-plus home run guys.
I did too. That was one of my bold predictions in that episode. I think they have potentially 5 and multiple 30 home run guys. That's a little more bold, but I think the 20 home run threshold is in play for, maybe even Tyler Stevenson, but definitely Spencer Steer, Jonathan India, Ellie, Will Benson. I mean, shoot. TJ Friedl had 18 last year.
Well, I mean, saying Will's going to hit you know, 20. When he only had 11 last year, and you don't know how much he's going to play.
That's true, but
I think he's a 15 home run guy. Just like I think Marte's a 15 home run guy.
Listen, we don't talk about Will Benson slander on this podcast. We won't stand for it.
I think Marte
might be a 15 home run guy this year, but I think he's going to project to be about a 25 home run guy once he hits his peak. But he's still 11 years old.
I think CES is a 20 home run guy if he gets enough playing time.
I think CES is a 20 home run guy if he bunts only. That guy just hits bombs. He's massive. All right, let's get this train rolling. Thomas Dennis, let's get to the viewer mail portion of the Buy Sell Hold. Speaking of Noelvi Marte will bring more value in his first 7 years for the Reds than Luis Castillo in his 7 post-Cincinnati years. I have made a new rule where I'm not looking up viewer mail questions. I want to go feelings, no facts, because I feel like I can become a slave to the analytics. And I am selling this one, and I don't know if there's anybody on the planet higher than me on Noelvi Marte. I think for me, the question is Noelvi or Ellie for the face of the franchise 5 years down the road. I love both those dudes, but I love Noelvi Marte. But Luis Castillo is
a stud.
He's a guy. And his time post-Cincinnati has already been awesome. He's not slowing down. He's projected to lead the AL in ERA this year. Sure, ERA is a flawed stat, but I think I'm going to sell it. Now, you could splice this up and say, go from 2025 to 2035.
Right.
And I'll take Marte, but I think that Marte's got a few years before he hits his prime, and Castillo is currently right in the thick of his prime.
Yep, I agree with you. I don't know that it's a fair comparison. You know, talk about
what's fair.
If you want to talk about 5 to 7 years peak, I mean that's a whole different question.
Ooh, that is a different question. That's a fun question.
But as of right now, I'm with you. I'd have to take Castillo.
Yeah, sorry, Noelvi. Still love you, Bubba. Joey Gaditza says,
"Hi, Joey.
Buy, sell, or hold. Ellie will hit 25 or more bombs." What you got, Bill?
I've got him over 20 easy. I would say, yeah. I think the numbers on the Baseball Reference has for Ellie are low. I think his OPS plus is going to be, I don't know if it'll be much over 100, but I think he'll be over average this year, which is, you know, he was at 89 last year. So that's a pretty nice improvement.
You know, I'm buying in. Sorry, go ahead.
He was playing well. You know, he had seemed to kind of turn a corner again at the end of the season. He looked like he started to figure some things out. You've been reading that he's made some swing changes in the winter, you know, and we'll have to see how that goes. You know, we hear that from certain guys every year. We heard that with Barrero, you know, 3 or 4 times.
I hope he makes a couple more.
Yeah. But I think Ellie continues to get to be a better player. I'm hoping – the other thing I'm hoping is that he spends some time with Barry Larkin on defense.
And learns how to be a terrible broadcaster?
No.
Oh, sorry.
You know, it was funny because when Ellie was struggling, you know, there defensively for that – I don't know, it was, you know, a while there towards the end of the season. Barry was seeming to notice, you know, basic fundamental mistakes he was making. You know, letting the ball get in on him too much and that kind of thing. And I hope that Barry Larkin will work with him and, you know, take care of those minor flaws. And with his range and his arm, if he concentrates and does, you know, the fundamentals, he could be the best shortstop in the game.
For sure. Which is fun because some people say he's not the best defensive shortstop in the Red system, but that's not what Joe's question's about. 25 home runs or more. I'm buying it. I'm buying the more. For a bunch of reasons. One you alluded to, his plate discipline improved dramatically over the last month and a half or so of the season. Cut down the strikeouts, cut down the swinging strikes, and he started swinging at pitches in the zone, whereas he was chasing everything for a while.
Yes, he was letting
strikes go by. He was mixed up. There's just that gap between AAA and major leagues is massive, and people don't realize it. Another reason is that he's going to have all the protection in the order. None of this leadoff nonsense. None of this David Bell expecting him to come and just act like he's the savior
right
from day one. He'll have protection. And B, I don't know if you saw my Twitter post today. He's looking jacked. He took some pictures with cutoff sleeves. Ellie's looking yoked up.
So we're going to put him in the vests.
He's definitely wearing the vest with pride. He's put on some country beef this offseason, and I think that's going to translate to 30-plus for young Ellie. I'm expecting a big year from Ellie. I can't wait. Because you know what's more? Baseball as a Reds fan is going to be so – remember when he came up and set the league on fire first few weeks? Imagine a whole season of that when every news media outlet is talking about him for 4 months because he's the most electrifying player in baseball.
Well, and that's going back to something you were saying a few minutes ago. Ellie came up and, like you said, set the world on fire. Then pitchers and teams adjusted to him, and he struggled for quite a period of time. But then, you know, he and the coaching staff or whatever made adjustments, and then he seemed to be improving. The game is all about adjustments. You know, you think you got it figured out, they're going to switch something up on you. Yeah. And if he's smart enough and with the coaching staff, you can help him enough, and they can make those adjustments, there is no ceiling for him.
Yeah, 100%. When it comes down to it, I'll put my money on the guy that was blessed by the gods with the most natural ability of maybe anyone I've ever seen.
Best I've seen since Eric Davis.
Which is saying something.
Yes.
All right, next question. James Urban. Buy, sell, or hold, the Reds will win 2 division titles in the next 5 years. I'll go first. I'm going to buy. I think the Central is down this year, and they're going to take it. More because the Central is, I expect everybody else to be bad than the Reds to be setting the world on fire. And then they only have to win the division once out of the next 4 after that. But the more I sit here and think about it, they've only made the playoffs 6 times since I've been alive.
I was going to say, how many times they made the playoffs since you were here?
So the realist in me wants me to sell this, but I'm buying because I believe in these young studs that we have a lot of control over. How about you, Bill?
Yeah, I think I'd buy into that one. It's funny. You know, I grew like everybody. I've said a million times. You know, I grew up in the Big Red Machine era, and I thought that's the way baseball was always going to be here. And then the 80s came around.
I want somebody to write the book on Bill Lack in the 70s. Not just baseball related, the whole thing.
We've got an idea for, you know, that we're going to program that we're going to do once we get everything together, where we're going to talk about games we attended when we were our best games we ever saw. So there'll be a little bit of that. The night Pete Rose came back to manage the Reds, we had 17 folks sitting out in the green seats in center field, and I had a beer or two that night. My girlfriend at the time decided she was going to drink beer with the boys that night.
Uh-oh.
It didn't end well.
Subscribe to the Riverfront YouTube channel so you can get the rest of that story in a later episode.
That's the loudest I've ever heard a ballpark.
Yeah, 30, I can imagine.
35,000 people were all there were that night when Pete came back. It's the loudest I've ever been in a ballpark.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah, I cannot wait to hear more about that. Next question, Kyle Kapler. Rhett Lauder, Reds first-round draft pick in the most recent draft, starts 10-plus games this summer.
Bill? I assume he means for the Reds.
Well, I was going to say I'm buying it if he just means in general. But I'm selling it for the Reds.
If he starts 10 games for the Reds, that's not good.
That is probably not good. I guess there's a world where he sets the minors on fire and they can't keep him down. But you can always find an excuse to keep a pitcher down a little bit longer, especially
when he has
zero professional innings.
I assume he's going to start in Double A. I'm guessing.
I think you're right.
You know, so he will be there till at least Memorial Day, I would assume.
But I do think he's on that fringe of the Reds' fantastic depth that I keep harping on.
Yeah.
You hope to not need Rhett Lauder this season.
Right.
But the fact that if things go a certain way and he performs, he could be in the mix is pretty exciting for me. So we're selling you, Kyle. Rich Thompson asked an A or B question that I have turned into a two-part buy, sell, hold. He said, buy, sell, hold, a healthy starting rotation is the most important piece of the Reds playoff puzzle. What do you think?
Yes.
Okay. You're buying that?
Yep.
I am going to sell it. I think it is the second most important piece because the Reds were this close to making the playoffs last year with a disaster of a rotation. Now, I think it's the most important if they plan to advance in the playoffs and have World Series aspirations. But just to make the playoffs, I'm going to make that number two, which leads to the second part of Rich's offering. The 2023 rookies progressing, plus a little Candelario action, are the most integral piece of the puzzle. And that's where I say yes. I think that if this offense can do what I believe it's capable of, it can withstand for a regular season's time a mediocre starting rotation.
How would you define that? By 796 runs? Or do you think more than that?
I have no idea. 1,000 runs.
Most runs ever. Don't tell me with numbers.
Most runs ever. I ran out of wine. I can't dive into the analytics on that one.
You didn't bring the bottle.
Classic rookie move.
That's right.
I get it though. I can see the rotation. If the rotation's above average, then this team makes the playoffs.
Yep.
So we'll see. I'm just excited. You know, ticks dig the long ball. A couple more questions just to wrap this up real quick. Non buy sell hold edition. Seth Shaner. And as always, these are viewer mail questions from our friends at patreon.com/riverfront. Since you where you too can join the family. Seth says, am I the only one drowning my sorrows over Joey Votto seemingly not coming back by buying up all the Votto baseball cards I can find on eBay? I feel pretty confident that you are not the only person doing that. But I'm holding out hope. I'm holding out hope that he comes back, Bill.
Hey, Seth, I think you're bidding against Chad for those cards.
You guys should just work together on this. You can drive.
We need to communicate.
Drive the price down. Split the cards in the middle. Jordan Salisbury asks a great question that I do not have a good answer for. He says, "Good day, gentlemen." Just a pleasant way to be greeted. Good day to you as well, sir. I was wondering if anyone would be able to tell me exactly what the state of Reds TV broadcast currently is right now. It all seems a bit confusing with the Bally Sports Channel going bankrupt. I have no freaking clue, Jordan. Bill, maybe you have some insight, but the more I look at it, the more confusing it gets. Rob Manfred just announced today that there's a scenario where MLB can have a streaming platform, but for only half the teams, which is also mind-blowing to me. Why would you even have the streaming platform if only 50% of the teams are on it? It boggles the mind that they don't make this sport, which people keep telling me is dying, why they don't make it more accessible to the fans. I don't know. Bill, any other insight?
On this question, I read a while back, and this may have changed since then, that the Reds games were going to be on Bally this year. And I have not heard anything any different. So I'm assuming on my DirecTV, my Bally Sports, which is where I watch the Blue Jackets and whatever else, that the Reds will be there.
Yeah, as far I understand as that to be true. Yeah, for 2024, I think that's the case. After that, I have no stinking clue. And I think it could change at any time.
Right.
Next question or next statement comes from Joe Farfsing. He says, recast classic television program Saved by the Bell using the 2006 Reds. And I'll tell you what, Joe, we're not going to do that right now. But I want you to join me on a podcast during the dog days when we just don't have much to talk about, or maybe as a bonus episode where you and I go through and we will recast Saved by the Bell using only the 2006 Cincinnati Reds. I can't wait.
I'm glad you didn't ask me to do that because I couldn't have told you anybody on Saved by the Bell.
Oh, man, that was right in my prime. That was like watching episodes before going to school. As soon as you got home from school, because it was TBS, so they came on at like, 4:05 instead of just 4 because TBS is weird.
Right.
Saved by the Bell was my jam.
I only knew the one guy, Mark, what's his name? Mark
Paul Gosselaar.
Who I knew him from NYPD Blue.
An AC Slater. Kelly Kapowski, my man. Kelly Kapowski. Still beautiful to this day. All right, last question comes from Hooper Powell. He says, my niece just got employment with the Braves marketing department. What would your dream job be in Major League Baseball? I assume this means not as a player, because I definitely had some really, really dumb dreams of playing professional baseball for probably a couple years too many. What about you, Bill?
I would love to have a chance to try to announce.
Yeah, I can see you being good at that.
I don't know if I'd be good at it, but I'd like to try it.
Well,
it
depends on how many beers you're allowed to have during the broadcast.
I'll give you in the Joe Nuxall seat,
People be like, yeah, Bill, he's pretty okay for the first five innings, but 6 through 9, he really takes it home.
Until they close the beer stand. Joe Nuxall dropped a beer on my wife's head at the ballpark one time.
Amazing. That deserves a whole podcast. For me, I would have loved to have been a GM back in the day. I always thought that was the most interesting part of the baseball front office. Now I would just like to be, to steal an old Bill Simmons sports guy role, the Reds czar of baseball operations, where every decision that is made, they just have to run by me where I'm be like, it makes sense or it doesn't make sense. So many times the team's like, oh, let's do this thing where every other opponent says, yes, please, Reds, go do that. Now the Reds fans are saying, no, maybe we don't do that. And then they need a czar to just be like, all right, I'll give you my blessing.
Or you could be commissioner of baseball, and we could have a commissioner of baseball that actually likes baseball.
Oh, you know what? That's it. That is 100% it.
There you go.
And that is where we're going to wrap this up. Bill, any parting words of wisdom?
I never have a word of wisdom.
Well, any just random words.
I just try to string them together.
I love it. Well, thank you everybody for tuning in. Please go check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/riverfrontcincy. We have a lot going on at the Riverfront. We've got Riverfront U, where we're covering college sports. We've got the Bengals show. We've got Tim and Ben over there at Late Night Reds crushing it live on Sunday nights. Not this Sunday. Super Bowl. Go Bengals. Never mind. Lots of good content over at riverfrontcincy.com. We're bringing it to you. We're having a good time doing it. So please come join it. One more time, shout out to the Patreon family. Love you guys. Would love to have more of you. So come join this awesome, awesome community that's been built. Thank you, Bill, for coming. And Shout out to Adam Dunn. Shout out to Luis Alberto Bonilla, who played in the Caribbean Series this weekend. Maybe witnessed by friend of the show, Chris Garber.
Yep.
Shouts to Mr. Wayne Krenchicki and Eli Cash for Bill Lack. This is Nate Dawson saying so long, Cincinnati.